You're listening to Back to the Light with J.D. Rieger. Hey everybody, welcome to yet another episode of Back to the Light. I am your host, J.D. Rieger. With me is Steve Mayer, the proprietor of the Merry Crest Sessions, I guess, the founder, the producer.
I'm always averse to giving myself any sort of title, so yeah, we'll go ahead and go with that.
Something
works perfectly fine.
One of those things. Steve, thank you for joining me on the show.
Thanks so much, man. Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to, you know, I don't know you that well, so I've got some getting to know you type stuff to get through first, if you don't mind.
By all means.
First things first, I think you're not from Memphis, are you?
No, I'm actually a Chicago native, specifically the suburbs of Palatine. I moved down here. It's been nearly 10 years at this point. I had moved down here to study the recording industry and, you know, the music industry down at University of Memphis. It's been a wild ride since then. You know, I've hopped through Arden Studios, you know, worked down at, you know, the former site of Black Lodge back when it was just known as its address, 831 South Cooper, now known as the Zen House. I still have run sound, you know, throughout High Tone, Young Avenue Deli, and, you know, various festivals and other stuff like that. It was one of those things that, you know, I had initially moved down here to, yeah, just study, and while I'd initially intended on going back, having caught on with a lot of the studios and venues around the city, it was one of those moments where I kind of just assessed my options. Man, it's warmer, it's normal, it's cheaper, and like things have already gotten started down here, and next thing I knew, you know, a whole decade had passed.
I can definitely feel you on it being cheaper. You know, I just spent like 5 years in Chicago.
Oh man.
Not too long ago. And yeah, it's more affordable to live here for sure.
Oh, dang straight. It's just one of those things that
and it's a completely different culture too.
It is, yeah.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's always much love to that city. I still, you know, go back and visit once a month, you know, perform with my friends down our general local area, just, you know, have fun, jam, and...
You go back that much?
When I can, you know, like, I still, yeah, still sing with a band called Liquid Faction, which is, yeah, mostly just a cover act right now, though they've got some originals dropping at some point or another. Something that, you know, music has been, you know, in my system for, you know, a very good amount of time at this point, and yeah, some connections, you know, never quite dissipate that easily.
Well, how did you get into it in the first place? Did you come from a musical family, or how did you discover, you know,
this is actually real
music?
This is actually a real wild one. I wonder how much it's a good thing I don't believe too much in like crud and stuff like that. I used to I wasn't that much of a musical family. I was part of back, you know, during elementary school and, you know, those older days, I used to, I did classical piano, you know, as much as my lessons dictate and all that, but I was never, you know, particularly into that, so I kind of, you know, fell out with it a bit after a while. Though slowly, you know, I kind of, you know, I was always fascinated, you know, by, like, you know, video game themes at first, and then eventually, you know, right as Guitar Hero and the Rock Band games were dropping, me and my friends used to drop into that a lot, and it eventually culminated in starting a band with, you know, the childhood friend of mine that's kind of got me back into, you know, learning how to play keys again, learning how to play bass, you know, just solely off YouTube videos and starting to sing again. And it was also how I started, you know, getting inclimated with a lot of other, both rock music and other types, when slowly but surely, you know, I wanted to just, you know, get more involved with the industry of that type. Like, I was initially a hardcore gamer, but, like, I always was interested in design and stuff like that, but it just didn't work out. It was, computer science was a little too far advanced for me, so, but...
Too much math?
Oh, yes.
That's...
One of those things, like, you know, there are... Me and some friends used to take video game mods and, like, that, you know, like, did, like, 90% of the actual coding work for you. All you had to do was just enter the... and import whatever data you were going into, so... The second you started, yeah, tried starting from scratch, it was, it was a wild scenario that
I can't even imagine
what happened.
Well, so at what point did you start to take music seriously as a career? What made you think, I want to actually do this?
It initially started as once I moved down here and started studying. Like, initially, I had gotten into it for purely reasons that, yeah, quite frankly, were purely selfish. You know, I just wanted to learn this so I could, you know, get my degree, get my family off my back and continue onward. But as I slowly just got acclimated with, you know, just working shows, you know, helping helping people, you know, get their own music out. It's there was a feeling that just, you know, kind of never went away after that. It was something that I truly enjoyed. I think mostly because, you know, back when I was in a band, it was very difficult. You know, we would write stuff, and, you know, it would take some effort to put it out. Like, you know, we were just in junior high and high school. We didn't know how to take quality videos. Certainly didn't have the material to release quality recordings, and a lot of those memories kind of wound up cast by the wayside, and it's something that I still, in many ways, regret to this day. We tried to, we have recordings and stuff like that that aren't, you know, of the highest quality, but it's hard to make memories. It was hard to make memories like that and maintain them for both for posterity's sake, just for yourself, as well as for anyone else who wanted to hear them. And I think in many ways that's kind of like what I liked the most about, you know, doing streaming like this. Like, even when I was working 831, where I was not just, you know, engineering, I was, you know, managing, I was booking, I was doing all sorts of other stuff like that. It's the one thing I had the most fun doing were these broadcasts, because when people just get started out and they want to, you know, share that music, it's difficult to share it in a high enough quality capacity, especially when you're just getting started and you don't necessarily know, or you don't necessarily want to commit the
you don't want to make a record necessarily. Yeah,
you don't want to commit the finances necessary to put that out just immediately, but you still want something more than just what's recorded off of, you know, your standard cell phone audio to show around and share with people. It's something that kind of really just got contagious from there.
What drew you to, like, because you work a lot in live engineering and you do live streaming shows.
Right.
But you said you bounced around in some studios before that. Why do you think you're drawn to, like, the more live engineering as opposed to the more detailed and, you know, sometimes, you know, I mean, album projects can last forever. I mean, is that it?
I think it's both that and also a form of, with live, when you're running live sound, the biggest difference that I've noticed is that you are on a very strict and very finite sense of time. You don't have, you know, the luxury of being able to agonize or making sure everything is absolutely perfect. Everything is, every note, every...
It's not really even expected.
Yeah. No, it's more just like, I want this to be able to go out on, you know, in a timely fashion and have it, you know, have people who are listening who may or may not have already heard it enjoy it. And I think that's, just kind of, it prevents you from getting a little into a bit of a, man, what kind of word are you looking for? Like, writer's blockish type of situation where you're just agonizing, you're like tweaking on little things that like slowly but surely become more, less and less noticeable to anyone but yourself. And at all of a sudden, you know, so much time has passed, you almost wonder, like, wait a minute, why am I, what's the hold up?
Yeah, I have been there. When you're doing are you still with the High Tone?
Yes.
Do you like what's it like working for Skinny?
Oh, it's always fun stuff. When I had started getting into live recording, like I was initially, you know, down at U of M, you know, just I was fortunate enough to have gotten into Arden Studios as an intern / day night guy to kind of, you know, knock the studio stuff the studio portion of, you know, my career around. And because of, like, you know, those moments that I had mentioned earlier about, like, things getting a little too easy to agonize over, I slowly started to kind of implement, yeah, just, like, a time limit on, like, you know, putting mixes out. Because I just wanted to get my reps in, you know, just continue to learn and, you know, just build up my knowledge of what was going on here. So, like, I used to, living off campus, you know, Skinny would used to be down at Newbies, where Craft and Barnes, well, you know, I worked with 831 and Sounds Good and Beyond were. And I spend most of my, you know, early time, you know, in live sound just kind of, just us watching alongside Kraft and seeing, you know, how we kind of approached this. And eventually, you know, coming up with my own methods of, you know, attacking live sound gigs. And, you know, like, I've always had major respect for Skinny. You know, he is the type of, you know, backs all genres, backs all demographics, always carries, you know, respect of making sure, you know, live music comes out, you know, as frequently as possible rather than, you know, just trying to, you know, make special occasions, you know, and highly paid.
Oh, yeah, there's music.
Clientele.
There's music at the High Tone almost every night, I think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And those are, like, you know, the venues that I always wound up frequenting the most, because that's where you usually are able to find those who are just getting started and those who are still looking to looking to share their music without, but not necessarily having the means or desire to do it this early.
Being a live sound engineer, not always the most glamorous.
Not always.
Do you have any? I don't know if nightmare is the right word, but any stories, you know, equipment malfunctions, diva musicians, any crazy live sound stories?
Live sound is always tricky because, like, in many ways, like, I always liken it to, it's like being, you know, a referee or an umpire in, like, you know, a sporting event. Like, you're expected, you know, be on the top of your game, and the best compliment to your performance is that nobody even noticed you were there. Luckily, because I'm, you know, I always try to gravitate towards, you know, the more DIY type and lower level events. I don't have that many nightmare moments, but there have been, you know, times where, yeah, like, you know, sometimes the equipment malfunctions. Like, there was this one time we were running Women in Memphis Music was actually running a large festival type event down in the upstairs room.
We were there. We podcasted there.
Yes, indeed. And that day, we actually had two of the monitors, the hearback monitors, the center one and the drum wedge, actually had gone out in the middle of Mama Honey's gig. And as I was jumping around from spot to spot, like, in between, something is clearly not projecting through into this room right now. I gotta look what's going on. I just start testing the house music through each of these wedges, and, like, the second one's on, like, okay, fine, we're good. We still have three. It's three that's still enough power. Then I tested the fourth one, like, oh god, no, this can't be happening, especially considering we had, like, Hope Claiborne's 8-piece coming up. The good news is and that's the key with live sound. You need to be able to, you don't have time to, you know, just open up, you know, whichever piece of equipment is and, like, actually legitimately troubleshoot it. If something goes out, it's literally, in many senses, just the next thing up, or just it's improvisation.
Yeah.
And luckily, being, you know, having been on the scene for 10 years, like, I like to think I'm familiar with a lot of the people around, and everybody was really, you know, open-minded about, you know, what the limitations were and what was going forward, and we could still put on a quality event no matter what happened. Luckily, you know, going through that, there usually aren't a lot of, you know, diva musicians who come through, but, like, really the only problems you have to look for in situations like that are, you know, some people like to get mobile with their vocals, and I think one person once came up with a lapel mic, which is an omnidirectional mic that will catch every noise that's coming around, which makes it a feedback nightmare, which is always a battle. I think I had one heavy act come in with, like, what amounted to an Xbox headset as their vocal.
Oh my goodness!
And it's like it was a wild scenario. There were times, yeah, mostly when equipment malfunctions, when stuff like that goes down. But I've heard, while a lot of this can't be attributed directly to me, like, I've heard a lot of horror stories, you know, down at, like, you know, larger events down at the New Daisy, where there are some national tour acts can get very demanding with both sound and lights and stuff like that. I recall, I think one, like, insisted do not use any white lights throughout, and, like, yeah, one little slip of the hands caused.
Oh, I have
moments where I have to stop singing and berating. Like,
I've seen some stuff too, man. I opened once for the Wailers, like the Bob Marley and the Wailers.
Oh man.
And the singer of the Wailers ripped his sound person between songs.
Oh god.
A new asshole between every song. It was hilarious to watch him go out there and be like, you know, peace and love and, you know, legalize it and whatever, and then, you know, call this poor girl a worthless piece of shit. God. In between songs,
people getting two-faced with the L, no matter the size or the danger of the issue. It's always one of those things that you know, over the course of my career, like, you know, I still stay loyal to Skinny and the High Tone. I still, you know, do other gigs around there. And I think some people ask me, like, why I don't, like, you know, go out for the Shell or, like, you know, Minglewood, like, in its full capacity or anything like that. And it's mostly for reasons like that. Like, I prefer to work, you know, on a smaller scale because, like, back when I was, you know, trying to break in, you know, we didn't know anything. We were still trying to, you know, get along with that. And, well, we never, of course, everybody always thinks about, you know, hopefully one day getting big. You know, you always want to remember where you initially started. And, yeah, you know, I just don't want to be around with people who lose perspective like that, I guess, in that sense. It's one of those things that... This is one of the professions that, like, you know, I truly, you know, enjoy doing. Like, I never consider this a job or anything like that. I enjoy it fully, and, you know, I never want to be participating in anything that makes it, A, feel like a job, or feel worse than that.
Yeah, it'd be great if it was, you know, financially sustainable, but it doesn't...
Oh, natural, it doesn't need to feel like work. Yeah, that's always the trade-off.
All right, well, let's dive into the Mary Crest sessions, but first, let's hear a sample from
one of them. Absolutely.
Let's hear, I think we're going to listen to and see Cease and Desist first. What song are we going to hear from them, and what do you remember about that session?
This is a song called Fuck Your Black Pill. I was a very, big fan of Cease and Desist, and of course, yeah, their initial
formerly the Negro Terror, the original members.
Yeah, formerly known as Negro Terror. And this session was, I believe, our fourth one. This is when the series was just starting to get off the ground. This was before I had Light Implementations. I was still figuring out the limitations of the setup I had put together. If you actually, like, watch the video, there's a moment where on one of the cameras I had accidentally left the display. There's a display that has, like, you know, the amount of time remaining, like, you know, initial, like, you know, controls and stuff like that. There's an attention to detail that you always have to, you know, grasp at when it comes to streaming, but overall, like, the sound quality at first, you know, even when we were just getting started, like, our first debut broadcast with the Smoke and Jays, and the best view of what we got was the sound quality immediately, and how it can handle both light tunes as well as heavier tunes. Like, Cease and Desist was the first legitimately heavy band that I held on the broadcast, so it was a very teachable moment, as well as a very just a very fun moment. You know, I've always been good friends with Rico and Raid, and I was glad that they were able and willing to jump on this so early in the early stages.
Well, cool. Yeah, I love them. They were guests on the podcast. Ride's been on twice, actually.
Oh, yeah.
So, let's check out Cease and Desist on the Mary Crest sessions. Mm-hmm.
What do you choose to lay down and rot? All because some chick won't suck your cock. But won't do the work. Nobody wants you cause you're a jerk. But stop your dancing. Fuck your black hair. Fuck your black hair. Let's go. The problem is you don't love yourself. Fuck up your mental health. Life's magnified by who you fuck. Regurgitate, throw that black pill up. Cause you don't need it. Fuck your black hair. Fuck your black hair.
All right, I'm back with Steve Meyer, and we're going to talk about... Steve, hold on. I got in my head about it. All right, we're back with Steve Meyer, and we're here to talk about the Marycrest Sessions. Steve, what was your inspiration?
Please leave that in. Second...
We'll discuss it.
Of course.
Well, now we have to because you asked me to leave it in.
So I know.
So now we have to leave it in because we referenced it.
Of course.
Unless we cut the whole thing.
Yeah. It's Mayer, M-A-Y-E-R. Yeah, much like John or Mercer Mayer, but like it's a very easy mispronunciation. It's very fun too.
We don't know.
As it goes along.
We don't often reference John Mayer on the show, so.
Nor would I expect you to, but it's all.
All right, we'll leave it in truth in broadcasting, but
absolutely.
Tell me what inspired you to start the Marycrest Sessions.
So, the Marycrest Sessions is in many ways continuation from the 8:31 show. It's what I used to do down at the former site of Black Lodge.
That 8:31 show didn't we play that in Mystic Light Casino Engineering?
Yes,
Eric, he's nodding, so I guess that's a yes.
Yes, he did.
Okay.
It was a show that I used to do, you know, with Kraft and Barnes. Like, it was initially started when we were on a, when I had first linked back up with Kraft, and after Newbies had closed down, we had mentioned that he was at Young Avenue Deli, and that he was starting to do broadcasts off what was known as Mississippi River Radio, and we eventually implemented, you know, some live guests that eventually culminated in, you know, doing live songs and live streaming and taking live video and things like that. It was a series that had gone on for about two years and beyond, eventually, until we both departed, mostly due to burnout. It was one of those moments where it was the favorite thing that I'd done during at 8:31 while we were running, you know, full-fledged shows, you know, having, you know, events and everything like that. Just because, as I had mentioned before, it was about introducing people, especially those who had not yet had material to share onto the scene, you know, giving them content to work with, to, you know, share with other venues, share with their fans, before they, you know, cut real actual records. And after we left, like shortly after the pandemic had started, and I spent most of the pandemic just kicking myself over that. Like, everybody was starting to, you know, attempt to live stream because, you know, there were no venues to host music. And I just sat there thinking to myself, oh my God, I had everything at my disposal to be at the center and, you know, and help artists, you know, during this time, and I had just walked away from all of that. And, you know, while my friends and, you know, family insisted to me, listen, you were burned out, you had to get out of there, it still was something that haunted me. I was always like, well, yeah, but still, there was stuff to be done.
There was meat on the bone still, yeah.
There was. And while I was then living in an apartment down out in Midtown, that of course was, yeah, certainly no position to do that, so I would jump around from house to house, you know, looking for a potential base of operations with which to do this, either that or a building of some type. And I had spent probably, you know, 3 or 4 months going through houses, mostly thinking, man, if I knock down this wall, if I do all this baffling, if I do all this this crazy electric work, then maybe, just maybe, this will be viable as a spot to use. And go figure, on my 30th birthday, this house down on Marycrest Drive had come up on the market, and as I was scrolling through the pictures, I noticed that there was some form of music room already in there. There were diffusers, as well as, you know, a set of organs that were already there. I'm like, oh my goodness, this is an actual rehearsal space. This is like 90% there. And after I walked through the house, I immediately, you know, just went around to write a letter to the previous owner saying, listen, I'm after this house. I'm putting in a pretty significant bid for this. I worry that, you know, there might be, you know, a landlord or, you know, a renter, you know, probably offering more than this. But here's what I'm going to do with this room. Here's what I've done on the scene that, you know, reflects all of that.
Wow.
I feel confident that I am probably the only person bidding on this who is going to use this room the way you have already been using it. And a few days later, my realtor contacts me back. He said, listen, he's taking your offer. And also, if you want these organs, you can have them. I was just stunned.
Wow.
It was a moment where the organs themselves, if you've been in the house, yeah, you'll see them. They don't actually work right now. Yeah, two Hammonds and a Leslie cabinet, they don't work, and they're naturally a pain. But like, it's not equipment that you just hand off to who I believe is a total stranger. I mean, that's nearly $10,000 worth of gear. Like, wow. I've always been a believer in that if you give to the community, it'll give back to you. And there was never a bigger validation than that moment. So over, you know, the next 2 years, you know, there were a lot of renovations being done, you know, just to, make the house livable and to set things up, getting, you know, the remainder of the baffling put up, getting the equipment acquired and tested. And it's a series that has started off in May of last year, and it has not looked back since.
So, I mean, just to go back a second, you think the original owner took a lower offer from you to,
I would not know if that is true, but like, this was right around the time that the housing market, you know, was, you know, going completely out of control, you know, what with COVID and everything else that was going down there. And while I had put an offer that was, you know, higher than the initial, you know, asking price, like, I had, there were like some other spots that I had like, you know, tried to go in on that wound up like getting sold off for like, you know, was such a significantly higher amount than they were being listed for that I thought, oh God, I can't let this one slip through my fingers. I got to do everything I can to try to make sure it lands in my hands. And yeah, like,
sounds like it was meant to be.
I would certainly imagine so. Like, it was of all the houses and buildings I had seen, the one that I felt was the easiest to adapt to an operation of this design, and so far it has done exactly that. You know, there was a closet that's, you know, eventually and currently been turned into an ISO booth. Like, I'm slowly in the process right now of turning what is currently my bedroom into a control/mixing room of sorts. It's been a massive work in progress, but like, the amount of effort that's gone into it over the last 2 years and the quality of the output of what has come out, I think, has eclipsed any other spot I could have probably hoped for.
How many episodes have you done? Or they're not really episodes, I guess, but how many guests have you had?
We're on 34 and counting right now, and we've got a whole bunch lined up. Like, you know, every Tuesday throughout the first April one is currently held. There's a whole bunch of bonus dates already held in February and March. Like, this thing is trying to push forward.
Who do you got lined up?
Oh man, next week we've got Stay Fashionable on Tuesday, followed by Spite House on Friday. And yeah, there's a whole mess of artists, you know, of all types of genres.
I don't know either of those bands, I have to confess.
It's all good. In many ways, that's my intention. You know, there's a lot of known known acts, and also acts who are just getting started that would have no releases. That, yeah, I've wanted
and,
to.
And
no
member of either of those bands should take that personally, because I'm about to turn 45. I'm, you know, they're probably younger bands, I would assume. And I don't get out as much as I used to. So,
absolutely.
I actually value this. What you're doing here is super cool for someone like me who, you know, quite frankly, needs to catch up on some of the Memphis bands that I'm not so aware of that are, you know, younger than me. So I'm kind of down for what you're doing here.
Yeah, one of the things that I like to do the most about this is that while there are other organizations and other musicians who are capable of streaming, like if you're a solo songwriter, if you just have tracks or, you know, keys or guitar to play along with, it's a lot easier to set up a stream. But for bands without you know proper equipment, it's very difficult to get a quality sound out there. Not necessarily studio quality, but, you know, good enough that can be easily shared without, you know, yeah, more advanced equipment available. And a lot of series, you know,
I would say that you're getting pretty, I know from our session, I know from the Owlbear session I've watched and the Season Desist session that I've seen and that we just heard some of, I mean, you're getting way better than demo quality audio,
I'm glad. Yeah. I much appreciate that. And there, you know, there are studios that also do this, but I think, yeah, one, they don't do it anywhere near as often as, you know, weekly, nor... And often more than
or
often.
Or as democratically.
Yeah, I was going to say a lot of certain, you know, areas, you know, only stick to certain genres and other types of demographics that are more accessible. And one thing that we always wanted to, you know, make a point of, back from the beginning of 831, what I've continued to do with this is to make sure, you know, this series is for everybody, whether you have nothing out or everything out, whether you're light or whether you're heavy, whether you're electronic. No matter what it is that you're trying to spread your message around, it's open doors.
I dig it.
And like
it,
that
man.
Was
that's,
the big thing that I always
noble.
Respected the most about, you know, Skinny of the High Tone, you know, Mike and the others down at Growlers, is that they don't just do, you know, your occasional, like, you know, not necessarily A-lister, but high-level, you know, top-tier types of artists that are, you know, already well-known and already guaranteed draws. They'll do stuff, you know, no matter which day it is, no matter which genre it is. If you want to play, they will help you, you know, get your show set up and, you know, ready to go out. And that's where I mostly frequent, you know, one, because I work at the High Tone, and also because, yeah, since they're doing stuff, you know, daily, it's a lot easier to, you know, find artists who are, you know, just getting out there who can, you know, use that.
Yeah. I mean, with the small room especially, there's lots of up-and-coming artists down
there. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be able to help people in the sense that, and give them the help that I wish that, you know, me and my old bandmates had back in the day. Because, yeah, we still had songs, you know, back, you know, in our high school and college days that, you know, never got printed, never got video recorded, never got audio, and, you know, they're simply... in many ways lost to history, and you never want to be unable to look back on that.
Yeah, I mean, I have similar motivation for doing Back to the Light. You know, I think that there's, you know, just not a lot of spotlight being shown on the scene, and I think that, you know, having these kind of conversations, I mean, in media, and so I really admire what you're trying to do with the Merry Crest Sessions.
Well, thank you very much, man. I mean, it's a pleasure to be on here, and I mad respect for what you do here as well, man. It was a pleasure having you guys on the show as well. Don't forget.
Yeah, I almost asked you to bring something that we, you know, did to play on the show, but I was like, you know, people on the podcast have heard me enough.
All good.
You've got a Patreon, right?
Yes. The Patreon is what, I started this year, and that's what I'm mostly looking to plug here as we go along. Naturally, I've run this show, you know, every week, every Tuesday that, you know, didn't have any, you know, last second conflicts or, you know, any major, you know, holiday issues or anything like that. And it was much like we did back when we were running 831, you know, every Thursday that we could. But, you know, there has been such an, you know, outpouring of support from the community. There's been such a long list of artists who wanted to get on, to the point where, like, you know, for example, this winter, like, a lot of the initial schedulings that had gotten discombobulated due to the winter storm, you know, people got sick, people had you know, travel issues, people had, you know, the work schedules, you know, adjusted as a result of the winter storm. But even so, like, even, you know, posting some last second, listen, this date is up for grabs, whoever wants it, you've got it, like, every single time without fail, it's been able to be filled. And there's the list of artists who, you know, both want to work with me and I want to work with them, and in all formats want to be able to go down the list faster than just simply a weekly series would go. So what this Patreon is it offers, you know, all fans, musicians, anyone who just wants to support this, an easy way to do so. There's four separate tiers. There's $5, $50, $200, and $500. $5 is the standard for everybody. It's sadly the nature of the service, you know, live streaming, you know, recording, video streaming and sharing, you know, doesn't really lend to much of an offer, but it does enable you to access my full calendar, so it makes it easier for you or anyone you want to assist to set dates. While the latter tiers, the more expensive ones, are what I'm hoping will be, you know, more major collaborations among some of the other organizations in the city. For example, like the $50 one, you know, Garrett will guarantee you one guaranteed broadcast each month for you as the artist or any other artist you prefer, while 200 and 500 will actually take this Rig Mobile for, you know, live album recording, live streaming of, you know, shows in any location.
I mean, that's
the good news about
this
gear.
That's pretty affordable for mobile recording.
Absolutely. I want to offer it, you know, as a discount rate because, you know, yeah, the point of this is still it's still to make it accessible for those who are, you know, just, you know, getting started and still want to share these things.
We paid someone to come out and record here not too long ago, and it was more than what you are charging.
I would imagine so.
It's more than what you're asking for support.
The limitations of my gear, like, you know, kind of restrict how high of the quality can go, but the quality still comes out very, very high quality, as you and several of the artists would attest.
If we ever do something here where we're trying to stream it again, we should talk to you.
Absolutely. No, I'd certainly love to.
No offense to who we worked with last time, but
the point of these tiers is, like, you know, whether it's, you know, local record labels or local venues who want to do something, you know, semi-regular where these features are implemented, I'm willing to do that in order to make this feasible as a full-time operation where we can, you know, host shows not just on Tuesdays, but any day or any time that, you know, I'm available. As that rolls, I can only hope that, you know, it grows to that level of commitment. You know, my end game is to reach, you know, at some point, yeah, at least, you know, $2,000 of contributions a month. And if that is the case, then all of a sudden, you know, my schedule opens up clearly and things might be able to expand, you know, even farther beyond that. You know, get additional camera angles, get higher quality, you know, mics and recording, and, you know, make it easier to, yeah, for the mobile operation to travel along.
So, and I mean, there's lots of reasons. I mean, technology is always changing. Gear needs to be upgraded. Gear needs to be fixed. Gear, you know, your time is valuable just in and of itself.
Yeah.
So there's lots of reasons to give to the Patreon page. You want to tell people, is there an address for that? Like a Patreon?
Yeah, patreon.com/TheMerryCrestSessions. Yeah,
there we go.
Every social that we have on Facebook, Instagram, Threads, and YouTube has that link available.
Threads. How is Threads working for you?
It exists. I had to...
that sounds about right.
It's there to... oh, Lord.
I have resisted the call to Threads.
It used to
so
be on
far.
Twitter/X up until, you know, that whole mess. I don't want to... off topic this too much.
No, that's
it's
cool.
It's there mostly just to
I feel you.
There is an operation, like, yeah.
So Patreon,
mostly folks on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube where the activity is the highest and most easily accessible.
Yeah, yeah.
And but if by chance you're only on Threads, you can also see it there.
If and the show live streams on social media, and then the archives exist on YouTube. That's the
every
way it
works. Every show will regularly stream, regularly goes on Tuesdays, and then YouTube, which is reserved for the archives, will always get updated with after 2 days, usually at like 8 o'clock in the morning, 2 days after the initial broadcasting date. I always, you know, take 2 days. It's to post-produce the show. There's always like some tricks that go into this, tricky things you have to get over when you're live streaming. For starters, like when you set up a stream on Facebook, you can't, until the stream is actually live and active, you can't actually share the link. So you always have to start it earlier than the show actually starts, so people have an opportunity to share it. And while that's happening, you know, we just leave, you know, just rotation of the camera angles. There's an elevator music theme that's like probably like 5 seconds long, just on an endless loop.
I think I remember this drill from when we played.
Absolutely. It's something that, you know, yeah, YouTube is, the YouTube archive is used to, yeah, just chop that section off, and, you know, if there's any, like, you know, weird blips or missyncs in the audio, you know, compared to the video, we can fix those. Like, I'm working on archiving the video footage a little bit better in case, you know, the OBS activity, you know, accidentally freezes the image, that you might lose some frames. There's still, yeah, it's a little bit tricky to sync up, but slowly but surely, you know, we're looking for better workarounds around that. Well, I wound up, you know, kind of streaming this on Facebook mostly because it was easier, you know, to tag individual people. It was easier to tag band pages to make it easier to share. While YouTube, you know, it's It's a lot easier to archive, but it's not as easy to tag in the current moment.
Sure, sure. Tell me about the second band that we're going to listen to and see in the podcast, One Strange Bird.
This next band is called One Strange Bird. Yeah, they're an alternative rock act who had initially gotten started at Rhodes College. I had caught them, I think, on their fourth show down at the High Tone Small Room. And this is one of the acts that, you know, gives me the motivation to do what I'm doing. This is an act that, you know, once I initially approached them, they had, you know, they didn't have any merch ready yet. They didn't have any, you know, demos or EPs or anything like that out yet. But they had a whole crowd of people who were already enjoying their music. You know, my buddy Dara, who was working door, because I wasn't able to catch the entirety of the set because I was working upstairs at the High Tone at the time, and said, "Dude, these guys are fantastic, man. Get them on the show." And needless to say, that was what we did next.
Do you have any
set up to arrange? And
do you have any memories of the session in particular?
This session, which you'll be able to find, is also available on the YouTube archives. This one came more when the show was now, like, you know, 4 or 5 months into its infancy. Like, at this point, I had managed to acquire some lights to use in the room. Major thanks to Dale and Aaron of Owlbear for donating these to me. And this was when, you know, things were a lot easier to... I had gotten a much bigger, better picture of, you know, how this gear was functioning and how to utilize it as well as I could as a one-person operation.
And so you think this one shows significant progress from season desist to like, you know...
In many ways, yeah. Yeah. In terms of production value, absolutely.
All right, I get you. Well, yeah. Let's check it out. This is One Strange Bird.
But all my love and life,
All right, that's the show. Thank you to Engineer Eric behind the gear. Thank you to Shangri-La Records for having us here upstairs to do this. Steve, plug your Patreon and your YouTube, please.
Once again, patreon.com/TheMerryCrestSessions, youtube.com/TheMerryCrestSessions, as I believe. Merrycrest is spelled MerryCrest. All I can say, you know, to the rest of you all is those who are already supporting, thanks as always for supporting local music. This is why I do what I do. This music scene is so vast and still so full of talent from top to bottom, with every genre, with everything that goes on across the city. There's so much to find and so much to see and so much to enjoy. And there's so many people who have, you know, helped make this possible. You know, shout out to Crafton Barnes and Allison Casper, you know, who, you know, worked with me on the early stages back when I was starting to live stream. Thanks to Dan Ward, who, you know, helped put this room together. Thanks to my family for being supportive. Thanks to all my friends. And thanks to all of the, you know, the musical acts who have already participated and were already actively trying to participate. I can't wait to continue to go down this path and to continue to aid the local music scene as the best I can.
Well,
it's a way that I'll, you know, archive. You know, there will be so much. There will be so much to see, so much to share, and so much history, you know, to track. And I think, if anything, you know, that's what the scene's all, and this operation's all about. Much like yours, I'd imagine, no?
Yeah. For music and other fine podcasts, visit backtothelight.net. Until next time, take care, y'all.